Mr. Joe Brooks, Real One. Can you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Brooks?
Yeah, Bethnal Green.
What was the date of birth?
3rd of 7th, 1932.
And could you tell us a bit about your family and your background in Bethnal Green?
Yeah, my father was had his own business, material imports, exports.
What sort of material?
Clothing, like a tailor material. He had a lorry. One started off with Thorson Cart, then he progressed another van, which was then when the war started off, it was confiscated as an ambulance, which was the finish of that career for him.
How comfortably were you off? What was your house like in Bethnal Green and the rest of it? How many of the family?
I had two sisters, mother and father, and myself, obviously, three children. We had no outside toilet. No washing facilities, only a sink. We used to get the tap water from the tap outside. Very basic. And that was it.
So quite hard.
Yeah, it was, no luxury at all. I remember the gas. We used to have gas mantles. As for lighting.
Your dad's business wasn't that profitable even when it was going.
No, that was the norm of life in Bethnal Green then.
Now, what about your education? When would you start school?
Obviously, I went to infants. I don't remember a lot of it in Bethnal Green. Then war started. I was evacuated to Bury St Edmunds with my two sisters and my mother. I think we stopped there for about 6 months. Never got on with it. Country life.
Now, what was the problem? Where were you actually billeted in Bury St Edmunds? Who were you with, or what sort of a
I was on a farm, but that's all I do know. I was on a farm in Bury St Edmunds.
And that was from September 39 to March-ish 41?
Yeah.
40, rather?
Yeah.
And do you remember anything about the evacuation? Why didn't you get on with it? I know you're 7 or 7, 8?
Me personally loved it, the animals, and first time I've seen animals and rode horses and all the rest of it. But the lifestyle, and away from my father, my mother, and my sisters, we just went back to Bethnal Green. We was there for a little while, then they rehoused us as a big sort of redevelopment at Chingford for the outspill of London, and we got a place in Chingford.
Now, so you moved there when, would you say?
It was the later part of the war.
Now, how did the war affect your life, as far as you were, you're just a kid, but how did it affect you?
Schooling. I suppose we'd done a lot of schooling. Because obviously there was air raids, and they had the doodle bugs, then the rockets. So there wasn't a lot of schooling to be had.
What do you remember about the air raids? Were there many bombs in Bethnal Green or later Chingford?
No, I don't. We was away, evacuated at the best part when the East End got bombed. Because when we come back and then we moved to Chingford, we could see it from, because we was high up, we could see the raids sort of going on over London. But as for
But you didn't get much personal,
We had a couple of scattered bombs around, doodle bugs dropped at the end of the turning, about a few turnings away, but there's nothing sort of disaster in Chingford itself.
Did you have air raid shelters? Do you remember your air raid shelters?
Yeah.
What they were like?
Yes, we had a Morrison, an indoor one, like a big table, erected with steel and angle iron with nets, wire mesh at the side. And it was we used to use it for table tennis during the day and sleeping overnight.
So that was the only shelter you had?
Yeah, you could either have that or an outside one
And you actually slept under it at night?
Yes.
Most nights?
Yes, most nights, yes.
What about your parents?
Well, no, really, they used to sleep, you know, sleep upstairs.
They didn't worry?
They didn't worry, no. I mean, it's mainly for the children and, you know, all the family sleeping there, but...
And what about rationing, food and clothing? Did that affect you much?
Yeah, you know, obviously, I suppose we was the fittest, because the sweets were rationed, food was rationed, and you lived to, you know, it was mainly homegrown food you ate. Everybody had allotment in them days, kept their own chickens, etc., etc. So, really, you didn't have rubbish food.
It was a fairly healthy diet.
Yeah, it was a healthy diet. Brilliant. And I mean, there's no takeaways what we've got today.
Clothes rationing, did that affect you much?
No. I can remember coupons for clothing. I suppose, like, in them days, we only got fitted out twice a year. That was Christmas and Easter, I think.
So it didn't bother you much?
It didn't bother, no, not really.
How were you doing at school? How did, you know, generally at school?
Just an average, you know, there wasn't a sort of what it is today, put it that way. It was, you know, a few high schools that nobody sort of just had basic lessons and training.
Was there any subject you particularly liked?
Well, obviously, being I was, you know, keen on sport.
Which sport in particular?
I ended up playing semi-professional football, so obviously it was football, cricket. I loved it. The other lessons, I didn't have no interest. But show me a field and a ball and I can do anything.
Who did you play for football at the time, you know, when you were...
I had a trial for West Ham. And in them days, the money was £20 a week for a top professional. They offered me to go apprentice, I think it was about... £12.50, which I, you know, I thought myself, just coming out of the army, that was no good to me, that sort of wages.
That was when this happened. So, right, I'll come back to that.
Yeah.
So, but who were you playing for before you went off to the army?
Chingford.
They had a local team. Good standard?
Yeah, because in them days, it was everybody, that was all there was to do. Nobody had television, or very few and far between had television. So sport was a big thing in them days. Especially
what
the,
did you play? I mean, what position?
I always played right back. Defender.
Any other particular hobbies, or was it just football? Bit of
no, you used to play badminton, swimming. I was good at swimming. Well, I thought I was. any sport, I loved it. Loved it to bits.
Now, so when did you leave school? Would that be at 14?
I left school at 14. Yeah.
That'd be 1946?
Yeah.
What was your first job?
Boilermaker.
Was that as an apprentice? Or
apprentice.
And where did you have to go for that? Tell us a bit about that.
In them days, it was very strict trade unions. My father knew somebody was a boilermaker, and he got me in the trade. As apprentice, boilermaker, and I worked at, in Walmsley for a firm called W.B. Bonds that made during the war shells, boilers, etc., etc. Because when the war finished, they went on to making tankers for petrol, furnaces, anything to do with sort of boilers, pressure containers.
What exactly were you learning as an apprentice boilermaker? What was the trade? I mean, what were the skills?
The top one was a plater, and you got drawings, and you whatever one made it, and you made it up. Like from a petrol tanker, all they do is give you a drawing, and you got the sheet metal, had it rolled, got the dish ends done, and made it from scratch.
So there's a lot to learn.
Yeah, it's quite a skilled job. Until you see it on the back of a lorry, with all painted up on sprayed SO or whatever the case may be.
And how long was the apprenticeship?
4 years, I think it was, 4 or 5 years.
To about 1950 then?
Yeah.
And did you enjoy it? I mean, do you enjoy the trade?
Yeah, I did actually, yeah, because we had a little bit of we wasn't always in the sort of work area. We were working outside as well as inside, so it was, you know, it wasn't just sort of factory work, if you know what I mean. We had a bit of freedom. It's very dirty and manually, very manually work, very hard. But yeah, I suppose I did enjoy boiler making, yeah.
And were you aware that you were going to be called up at some point? Well, when you were 18. Yeah.
Well, obviously, we knew that we used to go to youth centre, and, you know, boys that were older than us used to get called up for medical, and majority obviously went in the army because the Navy was, and the Air Force was sort of dismantling. They had too many numbers anyway. And for anybody to get in the Navy and Air Force, it was a one-off, like, you know, they just wasn't taking them. Majority went in the army.
And what was the actual call-up procedure as far as you were concerned? Do you know the date you were called up as well, you know? Roughly.
I was 18, I know I was 18 when on your 18th birthday, just a little while after that, so it must have been September, October time. I got my papers to go and have a medical. And that was at Wanstead.
And what happened at the medical?
Obviously, it's a thorough medical, plus the written exam. Then you're interviewed by an officer. Takes into consideration your job, what you do for a living. Being I was a boiler maker, he said I got quite a chance of going in the Navy because that was a sort of trade I was looking for. But lo and behold, I never heard anybody in the National Service going in the Navy at all. And obviously I was full of bits saying I was going in the Navy when everybody was going in the Army. And when I got my papers, lo and behold, I was in the infantry. Everybody put down all different things, like, you know, and all my friends, and, you know, one of my mates was 6 foot something and he went in the tank corps. It was just potluck, where would our bankers be? So there's a.
Now, you don't know when you were actually called, about October?
Something like that.
1950,
yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
And where did you have to go?
Colchester, of all places.
And do you know which barracks at Colchester?
Oh. No, I can't get off my head.
That's all right. No. And you were joining the Essex Regiment?
Yes, in Essex. You went in your county, like there was Essex, Northamptonshire, Suffolk, Bedsonar, something. And you just went in your own, where you come from, your own county. I was in the Essex.
And it was their depot, regimental depot? That
yes, where they'd done the basic training, 6 weeks basic training.
Now, when you sort of went there, tell us about the journey out there, because you met some of the people you were to serve with when you were leaving London, didn't you? So who did you first meet?
Well, obviously, I had to go to Liberal Street, from Chingford to Liberal Street. And when I got to Liberal Street, there was quite a few chappies walking about with cases and little holders. And the first one I got talking to was Fred Brett. We was both going to Colchester, obviously.
What impression did he make on you?
Well, he come from where? I mean, he was a sort of a country lad. It's quite comical, really. That, he didn't know anything about London, where I was born in London, so it was sort of two different characters altogether.
Did you get on well straight away?
Oh, yeah, fantastic. Like, he was interested in what I knew about London and vice versa, what he knew about the country. Like,
what was the journey like? Did you meet anyone else, or was it just a...
Well, there's obviously quite a lot. There's all going to Colchester. There's quite a lot of... But he was the one that I sort of spent the rest of me... Everywhere I sort of went, or he went, we both went together. Because our both initials was Brett and Brooks. So it all went alphabetically order in the army, wherever, you know, they took it on alphabetical order.
When you got to Colchester, you arrived as a civilian, then they've got to
That's
take
right,
you
yeah,
in.
Yeah.
What do you remember about your reception as a raw recruit? How did they actually take you in that first day?
Obviously, when you they picked you up by coach from the Colchester station, and you arrived by coach, you know, worst place of all, was on the parade ground. into some art, and then they get you lining up and sergeant major. I don't think he was born, he was made. Unbelievable. He came over and shared and, you know, telling you what not to do, what to do, where to go next. You would be divided up into groups and so and so would take charge of you. It was, I suppose, a frightening day. A very, you know, and you was led into, I think there's about 15 into huts, basic huts with the...
Now, what were the huts like? Can you describe them?
You know, it was just like long huts, beds either side with the old fire in the middle, which was never used because it was, no one didn't like to get it dirty because it was black, one of them coal wooden fires. The toilets and the washrooms were in the middle. Mainly cold water. Never did have a boiler, I don't think. Just basic bed. You had a tin cabinet beside the bed and a box at the bottom to keep your, obviously, clothes, etc.
Now, if we look sort of, if we sort of, what about kitting out? Do you remember
oh,
that?
Yeah, yeah.
What did they kit you out with?
Yeah. I think we got the rough end of the deal, all the army surplus from the during the war, which was either large or small. There's no in between. So you had to make do, you know, the kitting out, you, they just look at the size of you and give you what they thought. Once you got all kitted out, the next day was the air cut. Everybody in them days used to have a Tony Curtis haircut, long hair, and and I remember going to the barbers, and I've never seen so much hair on the floor in my life. And the hat you had, you could barely get on before you had a haircut. When you had a haircut, it fell on, went down to your neck. It was horrendous.
It was a severe haircut.
Oh yeah, them days, I didn't mess about in them days.
Did you mind?
Well, you, let's put it this way. Change your appearance, put it that way.
Now, if we look at a typical day, it sort of takes us through this basic training. I presume, was it 6 weeks, the basic training?
6 weeks basic training.
How would the day start? You know, I mean, what time would they get you up, Revelle?
6 o'clock, Revelle. Then it was, obviously, shower. Well, no, not shower. I don't know, the showers, are they? It was wash, shave. Get your bed tidied up. The blankets used to have to be folded around a pillar. It's a square. You had to be so. They taught you how to do that. Then it was breakfast.
Now, before we go on to breakfast, I know shaving is a problem for you. Can you tell us about the shaving?
Yeah, I suppose 50% of the chaps were then never shaved in their life. But because you had to shave, you've done it in cold water and cut yourself and bleeding, and it's quite horrendous, really, for people who never shaved before.
And that included you?
That included myself.
And were they sympathetic at all?
No way. They would even on parade. The sergeant would even look at you and say, "Laddie, you haven't shaved this morning." You was dripping with blood.
And what about breakfast? Or if you could take all the food together rather than go through each meal, what type of food did you have, and what did you think of it? How did it compare with home? You know, that sort of thing.
Oh no, breakfast was ridiculous. The porridge. Didn't have plates in them days. Used to line up. Used to have mess tins. And the porridge was that thick and heavy. You used to bend the handle on your mess tin, as they used to eat, put it in with a scoop, bang it onto those big drums. They used to hit it on the end of the scoop. You used to eat your mess tins, bend the handles. It was that heavy. The eggs were floating in fat. If you had egg, that was. It was just, food was nothing really. Nothing at all.
Was it bad quality ingredients?
Bad quality, terrible. Yeah, terrible. Food was terrible.
In every way.
In every way. Washing facility was the old galvanised bath outside. And if you can imagine, I suppose, cultures are all about, I don't know, 1,000. And if she was late for breakfast, everything used to be floating on top. Eggs and all in the bath. You're supposed to wash your mess tins up and eat them. It was ridiculous, really.
And that, for the moving on to sort of lunch and tea, or dinner and tea, whichever way you look at it. I mean, what sort of food there? I mean, obviously bad, but
it was bad. It was just like just basic, you know, mashed potatoes mostly. Cheese pie, they used to do a lot. corned beef pie. It was just all basic.
But no good for you.
No.
Did you eat it, or did you know?
Well, you know, because you was training that hard, and obviously you start to accept it and eat it. But mainly, we used to sort of use all our money on the nappy of an evening.
I'll come back to that. Okay. What about your tea? Would you get a tea or a evening meal?
Yeah, you used to get 3 meals a day. Then you used to get the nappy motor if you was out training or on a fine range. You used to get a nappy van, come round, and you get a cup of tea and a bun or whatever the case may be, donut.
Now if we look, so what? How would the training start in the morning? After breakfast?
After breakfast, then you'll have muster parade, what they used to call muster parade.
What was that about?
That was sort of making sure you shaved and kit inspection, whatever. Then you used to do a bit of drill.
Now tell me about drill. How did you take to drill? I mean, what did you think of it?
Well, you know, obviously, you had to know your left from your right. some people, you know, couldn't always out of step. And they used to go by numbers, 1, 2, 3, 1. It was all numbers. Very strict. And used to do drill twice a day. Once in the morning, once in the afternoon.
And did you see the point of it? And then? Or now?
No, it's just being like a collective and just marching in order and...
Did you get any enjoyment out of it, you know, once you got better at it, or did it still...
No, because it was so disciplined and... no, there was no enjoyment out of it. It was, you know, straight lines, do, you know, keep your distance, put down... there was no enjoyment at all.
Now, what about weapons training, the various parts? Start with the rifle.
The rifle, after a few days, you go and get your rifle, and they get you to believe that, you know, that is the best friend you'll ever have in the army. That is, wherever you go, that rifle goes with you. You look after it better than you would yourself, etc., etc. Then, a few days after, you went to the armory, and you fire a few rounds with your rifle, and they alter the sights to suit your own individual eyesight on a rifle range. And that becomes your pride and joy. And if there's any ever dirt on it, you know, your feet don't touch the ground.
How did you clean it? Did they tell you how to clean it?
You get pulled through wire mesh. You should strip it down. And you should have rifle inspection every day. And, you know, if they used to sweat, which metal does sweat, because I was a boilermaker, and metal do sweat. So the idea was to put it all through before you just go on rifle inspection. And anybody had a bit of dust or dirt, then obviously there was what they used to call jankers years ago, extra drill or extra training. It was horrendous, really.
And what about actually learning to shoot it?
Yeah, you had rifle training every day. It was a bolt action, 303 rifles you had then, Lee Enfield. You used to have a dummy rounds. You used to have a load 10 bullets in a magazine. There was 5 in a magazine. You used to have load and unload. And you used to do the bolt action every day. So, like, obviously, you'll find a bolt action rifle like an automatic. You had to be that quick, because that was your trade. Infantryman was the weapons, was your trademark. And so you sort of done a rifle every day. some sort of rifle
and
drill.
And how did they actually teach you to aim and to fire it, you know? Do you remember that?
Get on the range. That I didn't mind. That was the best part of the training. You started from 100 yards, back to 600 yards, which a rifle, the 303, was accurate at 600 yards for the sight. You just have a sight going up and down. Those terrific rifles. But the kick on them was unbelievable. You know, you used to make your jaws bleed, your gums bleed, and everything else.
Did they warn you and tell you to...
Oh, yeah, yeah. So you should have a, you know, put it to your shoulder as tight as you can. And the pressure on the trigger, the idea was to take your pressure up on the trigger until it got tight. Then hold your breath, then pull it. Then squeeze the trigger gently, then you got it right.
And how did you do at shooting?
Well, we was all marksmen. It's only because our friends was in the butts below, putting you up bullseyes half the time. But no, I think we was all, because that was our trade, the infantry, like to fire every weapon against like mechanics that are, you know, sort of stripped down a motor or whatever the case may be. In the infantry, we had to fire every weapon, from a Sten to a pistol to a rifle, Beringer.
Well, let's go look at some of the others. What about start well? Let's the Bren. What about the Bren? What do you think of the Bren and stripping it and the rest of it, maintenance?
Yeah, that was quite an achievement, the Bren, because it had come to a part in about, I don't remember now, about 6-8 parts. You know, that all assembled, and you had to do it blindfolded. And it was quite an accurate gun in them days, quite a good, and that was the mainstay. Like staying power in the infantry.
And what about, well, the Sten you mentioned?
The Sten that you put in the barn door, she was on top of it with them, it was just a little made of tin. That was a nothing gun. That was all right for, obviously, like in Korea, when you doing patrol, when you couldn't see anybody until you sort of bump into them. It was ideal in that sort of situation.
So they just generated fire?
Yeah, it's just a matter of. To throwing anybody at a distance, that was hopeless. I think that was only 25 yards.
Did they warn you that they'd go off if you dropped them?
Yes, they had a certain amount of safety was and all that, very good on them. The springs and all that. But rifle obviously had a safety catch, so that was pretty good. And the Bren had a safety catch. But the Sten was something to be desired.
Bayonet training? I forgot about that actually.
We had a bayonets.
How did they teach you and how far did it go?
Yeah, they used to stick obviously dummies up, which you see on television, like the old straw. And then we had the pick. We didn't have these sort of bayonets, the knife ones. We used to have the pick ones.
Little tiny ones?
Yeah, the round, pointy ones, not the knife. And bayonet training we done. Not very often, but we did do bayonet training.
You didn't practice bayonet fighting, you know, bringing the butt.
Oh yeah, that was a part. That was didn't come in basic training. That come in further training.
Any other weapons? What about the heavier machine guns or
no? That was
mortars.
Mortars, yeah, 2-inch mortars. That was obviously.
What about the 2-inch mortar? How did you fire that?
That was like that was easy enough. It's like a little tube. Just drop the little shell in the tube, pull the trigger and away it went. And you elevated it up or down to get the range, which you learnt, you know, so. And grenades, there was another one throwing a grenade.
Tell us about that, because there's quite a bit about grenades. You have to learn to fuse them and, you know. And
yeah, they come, obviously, a box of grenades comes up with, I forget how many in a box, say 20. Then you've got the detonator in them. Then you unscrew the bottom of the grenade, put the detonator in, screw the base plate up, then it's alive. Then obviously, training, you stand in the trench with the instructor, and he will tell you that they've got a clip on them. Just put your hand on the clip, pull the pin, and it doesn't, you can hold the grenade as long as you like with the pin out.